You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ryan Stacey. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, November 17th, 2016.
The Bishop was opened because it was something that I wanted to do, and I think that Bloomington needed it. It being really a place that was dedicated to original music.
Steve Westrich talks about opening the Bishop Bar later in the show in today's episode of Big Talk with Michael Glad.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, visits one of several rallies that have taken place in the streets of Bloomington during the past week. But first, these local headlines.
The City of Bloomington is now taking bids for installing solar panels on the roofs of City Hall and the Police Department. In a meeting this week of the Bloomington Commission on Sustainability, the City's Sustainability Coordinator, Jackie Bauer, said she hoped to have contracts signed by the end of the year. Bauer also said the Solarize Bloomington initiative, which is an offshoot of the Solar Roof Project, will be officially announced next month.
That Solarize initiative will allow residents to piggyback on our solar price. So since we're buying a very large system, we'll get a much lower price than a smaller residential installation would be. So we're asking installers to offer a similar price to local residents.
Bauer said 35 Bloomington households have already expressed interest, and she hoped to be able to extend the Solar Bloomington initiative to county residents as well. Bauer also reported that an environmental sustainability plan is under development for the city and the broader community.
Right now, there is an environmental chapter within the comp plan, and effectively, this sustainability plan will be referenced in the comp plan as the detailed environmental plan. So instead of that chapter trying to suffice as an environmental plan, we're really going to pull out all the details into this and go through an independent public input process.
Commission member Ryan Conway asked if the American Planning Association's best practices guidelines would be used in the development of the sustainability plan. Conway also wanted to be sure the new plan would mesh with the environmental action plan being developed by the city's Environmental Commission. Bauer assured the commission that both the APA guidelines and the environmental action plan would be consulted in developing the new sustainability plan.
Cyclists and pedestrians on South Walnut Street can expect to be rerouted until July of next year, thanks to construction of a new apartment complex, the Urban Station. The complex is being built at 405 South Walnut Street and 404 South Washington Street. The block is the former site of the Chocolate Mousse Ice Cream Shop. Senior planner Jackie Scanlon told the Board of Public Works in their November 15th meeting that alternative walkways would be created and bicycle traffic would be rerouted during the construction.
The fence enclosure will include approximately 5 feet of walkway along South Walnut. Adequate pedestrian facilities will remain open, however. On South Washington, the fence will enclose the existing sidewalk, but the contractor will install a pedestrian walk around. The Contraflow bike lane on Smith will be detoured to the next east-west alley to the north, and Smith Avenue will have to be closed temporarily to install utilities.
Scanlon said Smith Avenue will only be closed from December 27th to January 6th. 6 parking spaces on Washington Street will also be blocked off during construction. The board approved the use of the public right-of-way by the developer for the construction. In other business, the board approved contracts for the construction of 3 multi-use paths in the city. Multi-use paths will be built on the north side of Rogers Road, the north side of Winslow Road. A third path will be constructed on the east side of Henderson Street from just north of Winslow Road to Hillside Drive. Project engineer Neil Copper said the projects were part of the Metropolitan Planning Organization's improvement plan. The board also approved the replacement of traffic signals at the intersection of 2nd and College Streets and the intersection of 3rd and Woodcrest.
The Indiana State Police have announced that they are planning a sobriety checkpoint at an undisclosed location in Monroe County this weekend. The roadblock is scheduled for tomorrow, November 18th. Police suggest drivers have their licenses and registrations available. They also ask that residents who are drinking use designated drivers, take taxis, and call 911 if they observe erratic driving.
The Indiana Department of Natural Resources recently announced plans for a fifth season of bald and golden eagle observation at Monroe Lake. Training on how to identify the birds, the differences between adult and juvenile forms, and a discussion of common behaviors and activities will be held tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the Monroe County Public Library. Attendees will also learn the structure of the observation program and the procedure for submitting field observations. Program participants will be expected to volunteer a minimum of 2 hours per month between December 1st and March 31st.
The Monroe County Plan Commission is recommending changes to the county's zoning ordinance that addresses multiple uses and reuses of properties. In a meeting on Tuesday, the county's Assistant Planning Director, Jason Eakin, said the changes will accommodate more uses and activity. Eakin said a new category titled multi-use will be created and, quote, business and personal services will be added as permissible use within existing categories.
The desire was to identify a way to accommodate multi-tenant use in the county. For years, we've struggled with that issue. I've had that argument with Bernie and with many people over the years about how many principal uses can you have per lot of record.
Eakin went on to say the zoning code changes also address the need for office space within the business and personal category.
In looking at those business and personal use categories, one of the big ones that was in that category that was not in the other two was office space. That would be an unfortunate thing to leave out. I think there's information in the urbanizing area plan about that being an area where there is a lot of need and desire for additional employment space.
Eakin said the changes clarify how many and what kinds of principal uses would be allowed on a lot of record.
We are going to recommend we amend that to add in the shopping center, business industrial center, and commercial industrial adaptive reuse to the list, which also implies principal use by definition.
In discussing the definition of reuse, Plan Commission Chairman Richard Martin proposed a scenario to Eakin.
I had a question about the difference between the business industrial center and the commercial industrial adaptive reuse. If I have a site which is now in use, I could do the adaptive reuse. But what if I just take the buildings down and develop the site? Then I'm a business or industrial center. What standards apply then that would not apply to the adaptive reuse?
I think if you scrape it, if you will, if you raise all the buildings, then you will be required to comply with current site plan development standards. Landscaping, parking, it's no longer reuse.
The commission discussed whether to require the same improvements, such as sidewalks and landscaping, on reused properties as are required on new properties. Currently, properties being reused are not required to make the same improvements. Commission member Lee Jones cautioned against creating requirements that could become obstacles to reuse.
For me, and I have said this at the administrative meeting, but for me it comes down to either this property remains abandoned or we find a way to use the property and we help small businesses along the way and we make it so that at least we get some improvement out of it. And I think asking for the world is asking too much, because if we could then say, well, you have to do a PUD and then you have to have a certain percentage of green space, and it just doesn't work. That's not what PUDs are supposed to be for anyway. So I just find this to be this great middle path that offers a flexible approach to somebody who wants to start or enlarge an existing business in the community.
The commission did not change the property improvement requirements. Bloomington Economic Development Corporation President Lynn Coyne spoke in favor of the zoning amendments.
There are tens of thousands of jobs in Monroe County that depend on small business. It's tough for them to get forward, and just the ability to share space with another small business in the zoning classification in a properly built building in the right way would be a huge help to small business in the community.
The zoning code changes will next be reviewed by the Board of County Commissioners. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Ryan Stacey.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
The Bishop Bar and Live Music Venue doesn't cater to the stereotypical binge-drinking, hell-raising undergraduate crowd. So how does the place stay open? Amid a number of live music venues coming and going in Bloomington, the Bishop has survived. Together with its building neighbor, the Comedy Attic, it forms a lively entertainment locus just south of Courthouse Square, where townies and grad students can enjoy a grown-up nightlife. Owner and founder Steve Westrick reveals his secrets as he joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest this week, Steve Westrick.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Steve. He is the founder and owner of the Bishop Bar. Now, that's a live music and event venue. Steve, you're one of the cultural arbiters.
Wow. Of
that.
That's a first. I'm from Terre Haute, Indiana, so we're going to have to take it down. You know, that's a big word.
Well, that's beautiful. We'll start there. You were born in 1981.
That's true.
Okay, tell me all about the life of Stephen Westrick.
Thank you. I grew up in Terre Haute, though I was born in Missouri, in the same city that a man named Rush Limbaugh, although my memories really began in Indiana because we moved to Terre Haute when I was just for my sixth birthday. My dad worked, he's retired now, he worked in healthcare, in mental healthcare. He wasn't a practitioner. It was a suit, basically. Administrator. Charter Hospital, people may have heard of that.
Yes.
So depression, you know, eating disorders, anxiety, things like that. My mother stayed at home and raised me and my siblings.
So then there was moving over to Terre Haute.
That would be because of my dad's job. I think we actually moved there for Charter.
There used to be advertisements for Charter Health.
Yeah.
You know, for
I was in one of those. You're talking to a former child model, actually, Mr. Glab. I had two gigs. Yeah, my big break was a Charter Hospital ad, and I remember whatever, you know, semi-professional kid they had booked, for some reason it fell through, and my dad just said, I have a kid.
How did you wind up in Bloomington, Indiana?
I came here for college in 2000. I was a SPIA student, public affairs.
Uh-huh.
I had intended to go into something with the government, but it was a very sort of nebulous idea.
You somehow found yourself in the music business.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to be cool. You know, I interned at a record label. I worked for IU concerts committee, you know, 19 or so. Graduated college and I got a job with this music festival of sorts, which actually turned out to be kind of a crooked enterprise. That was the beginning of about, I would say about 5 years, I guess from 04 to 09 when the Bishop opened. Mm-hmm. About five. That was the beginning of about 5 years of just really frustrating and disillusioning experiences in that industry. You know, it was just another job after another. I just couldn't find my place, and I never felt satisfied. And you didn't get paid anything. I wound up in Bloomington because I. This is strange. I read the IDS actually in Chicago as a 26-year-old, and it's funny because that's how I learned that the place called the Cinemat was closing.
Steve Volan's place.
I remember living in LA, and I remember flying back in 2005 to look at spaces to open a venue in Bloomington. I didn't want to leave Chicago, but I didn't have the confidence to open that kind of place, a venture like that in Chicago. Also, just didn't need one. I think Bloomington really did. And I
really?
Think we've shown that. I think that, you know, we're still here after 7 years and we're, you know, 200 shows a year, more, you know.
It's funny you should say that because there's a number of places to hear live music. There's the Bluebird.
Sure.
And, you know, Bears and even Rhinos.
Yeah.
And Buzzkirk Chumley for a little bit bigger acts and then huger acts at IU, the auditorium. And there's room for all these people?
Well, I think that for a while, because, you know, the Bishop was opened because it was something that I wanted to do, and I think that Bloomington needed it. And it being really a place that was dedicated to original music.
Uh-huh.
I mean, really in its mission, because in all these places that we just mentioned, they certainly, you'll find original music all the time at the Bluebird, at the Buzzkirk, all these places. And all, one. Two, I don't fault them for doing, you know, cover bands, Red Hot Chili Peppers cover bands, karaoke nights, that kind of stuff. We don't really do that kind of thing. It's just not what we wanted to be. And I think we really wanted to be a place that rewarded and supported, you know, local original music. We were certainly conceived as a music venue and always will be, and that's an important part of what we do. One of the reasons I think that we do have some staying power, I like to think that we're good at what we do, but also we're lucky enough to be in a space that allows us to have a separate bar. And I mean, there's a reason why, you know, sort of a revolving door of venues in this town and many others. It's just hard to make a nickel with music. As a matter of fact, you don't make a nickel of music. You make you make a nickel selling alcohol. I opened, you know, on a shoestring budget. That bar was probably, I would say, about 50% complete when we opened, but it just, you can't get a loan for that. I mean, I was 20, I guess you maybe in theory, but they're not going to give a loan for a bar.
Yeah.
They don't like to do that anyway, especially not to 26-year-olds.
Right. This punk kid.
Yeah. But opened up just the best we could and then slowly just added things over the next 5 years, upgraded the PA, added the outdoor patio, upgraded from a beer license, which is very cheap, $500, relatively cheap, to a liquor license, which cost tens of thousands of dollars. We bought our license, Jared Thompson of the Comedy Attic, and myself, at an auction that the state put on as a result of the 2010 census. Monroe County had increased in population enough to award us, I think, seven additional licenses.
And you too were looking.
Right.
How did you come to the Bishop?
It's simply, I needed a name for the bar. There are things that, you know, had to happen at a certain time.
Right.
So we opened in September 09. At some point, you know, you have to do things. You have to have a sign made. You have to buy the website.
Right.
They have to make, you know, business cards, posters, whatever. And I don't do well with infinite choice, actually. What color should my wall be? That kind of stuff, you know? And I simply had a list of words, which I still do. I always have. It predates the Bishop. It's just something that I do. I just words that I'm just drawn to. I just like the word, the way it sounds, the way it looks on paper. I wish Bishop had a special meaning, but it was on that list. I simply liked it. It was put on that list because the Knights of Columbus, a Catholic organization, owned the building.
That is right. And still do.
And still do. Yeah. And I was just thinking of Catholicism and Catholic terms and Catholic imagery and didn't necessarily want to be associated with that. Hence the chess piece. But that's it. I've never worked at a bar before. And I don't particularly like bars. And not really a big drinker. I never really have been my whole life. It's one of the few bars that don't cater to the university. And, you know.
Oh, but I'm sure students go there.
Definitely grad students and certainly some undergrads. I would say we're probably, you know, just spitballing numbers here. I would say about 40% townies, however you want to define that. 40 grad students.
So you don't want to go there to become stupid drunk?
We generally know. So we're lucky to have very few problems, actually.
Yeah.
We almost never have to. We've never had a fight, actually.
Yeah.
Ever.
Really?
Not inside. There's been some weird scuffly stuff on the sidewalk and that kind of thing. And, you know, half of that has nothing to do with you. It's just a passerby or whatever. Right. It's fun for the most part. It's a little challenging, but in a good way, that people really do take possession of the place. Like, I really can't put anything on the wall without people getting upset.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing.
Yeah.
The people take ownership of
it. It's home.
They feel like they're home. We do a fair amount of non-music events. We'll do poetry readings regularly. Movie screenings, art shows, you know. We've had a wedding reception or two, a political rally or two.
I'd like to thank Steve Westrick. He is the big boss over at the Bishop Bar and Live Music Venue. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
You can hear that episode and all episodes of Big Talk with Michael Glab at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168 or online at INSCCAP.org.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
Today on Voices in the Street, undocumented Hoosiers. In the wake of Donald Trump's election as the 45th President of the United States, there's been no shortage of activity in the streets of Bloomington. Hundreds rallied on Sunday at a community defense event. Dozens spoke Monday at City Hall, and about 150 people marched on Tuesday against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Now, in an unconventional episode, Voices in the Street visits a rally that took place along the streets of Bloomington on Wednesday, when hundreds came out to the IU sample gates to support undocumented students.
No human is illegal!
No human is illegal!
What do we want?
Sanctuary!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Sanctuary!
When do we want it?
Now!
Thank you everyone for being here. We put out our petition yesterday. We've had an overwhelming response. We've had over 1,300 people sign our petition.
Will stand beside its students when Trump takes office. We demand that President McGrawby and Provost Rebell present a plan on how they will meet the needs of undocumented students as outlined in our petition by Monday, December 12th.
What do we want?
Sanctuary!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Sanctuary!
When do we want it?
Now!
No human is illegal!
No human is illegal!
No human is illegal!
No human is illegal!
I'm going to be reading part of an addendum to the petition that we released after the BSC meeting. As expected, the IU administration has expressed concerns over the substance of our request. Provost Rebell has pretended that we don't know enough about Trump's immigration policies when he started his campaign claiming all Mexicans and all immigrants were rapists. When he has recruited Chris Kobach and Jeff Sessions as people in his inner circle who will be taking leadership positions who are infamous for really tyrannical laws across the nation. And more than that, it is often argued by IU administration that it will not risk losing state and federal support for Indiana University in order to support its 100 to 300 undocumented students. But the truth is, we are not talking about a few hundred students or so. We are talking about tens of thousands of students who have had their dreams of higher education stolen from them by a university that has consistently failed to support them. Undocumented students are forced to pay out-of-state tuition in Indiana, despite the fact that they have often lived in Indiana for the majority of their lives and call this place home. They're ineligible for state and federal grants, scholarships, and loans, and unless they have DACA, they are unable to work legally. This is all while facing additional barriers to higher education that all low-income, first-generation students of color face, especially right here at Indiana University Bloomington, where students, faculty, and staff of color are sorely underrepresented and poorly supported. Undocumented Hoosier Alliance will lead students now to deliver our demands to President McGrawby and Provost Rebell. Students that want to follow us, remember to be orderly and to be silent as we approach. students who want to continue chanting, feel free to chant. Please keep letting people know.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Kelly Worley. Our engineers today are Chris Martin and Sean Albert. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ryan Stacey.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.